Art, great to be back with you, my friend.
Hey, great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Let's get right to this. Why is this even an issue about having a wall? I think there are Democrats and Republicans, left, right. We all like walls. We have homes. We have fences. We have security systems. It doesn't seem like it's too hard to say, hey, guess what? We have a barrier. It does work. And you can take places where we have it and don't have it.
Well, see, you're assuming logic in this analysis, which is completely wrong. This is something that President Trump wants, so that means that it's something that the Democrats do not want to have happen, because most of them just don't like President Trump. I was on the floor of the House when we passed the Secure Fence Act in 2006. I was also a congressional staffer, in addition to being an immigration judge. And I would note that such, you know, conservative firebrands as Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton,
Barbara Jordan,
Schumer, right,
way back.
I mean, but those individuals all voted for the Secure Fence Act of 2006.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the question becomes, what's really changed in the interim? And the only thing that's changed in the interim is the fact that the president had made this a key point of his campaign. And unfortunately, Congress is often like a sandbox. If you want something and I don't like you, I'm not going to give it to you, even if it doesn't mean anything to me. So that's really what we're looking at right now. There are a couple of different things that we have to consider when we consider a wall. We're not just talking about people. I mean, needless to say, you know, until we fix expedited removal, until we fix the Flores settlement agreement, until we fix the TVPRA, these families are going to continue to come to the United States. But the fact is that it is an impediment. It does slow down people. It's a force multiplier for Border Patrol agents. Most importantly, however, it also stems the flow of drugs to the United States over that border. Mexico is the largest supplier of heroin to the United States, far and away. Mexico is the largest supplier of methamphetamine to the United States, far and away. You don't need a driver's license in Mexico to buy as much Sudafed as you want. Quite frankly, you can cook it up in your own kitchen. So, you know, that really is what we're talking about. There's a lot of bad things that can flow over that border, in addition to, you know, a population of individuals who don't have a right to be in the United States. So, you know, the question becomes, why doesn't Congress want to secure that border? And the answer is because Donald Trump wants that, and they don't want Donald Trump to get what he wants.
On the political side of things, not only the anti-Trump bias, obviously, but there's the other part to people have made political calculations to say, hey, you know, where I vote is where I sit down at night and where I'm getting a paycheck. And we've seen benefits, government benefits for legal and illegal. And we all understand why people want to come to the United States. We all get that. We all realize that in different countries, obviously, there are hardships, maybe not to the degree of qualifying for refugee status, but part of it coming here, we get it. I think we all understand that. And I get the idea that because of invoking race and compassion, that really, we totally sidetrack conversations that are, as you said, based on logic, and it's a very simple thing. If you want what the United States has, you can't maintain it without enforcing the law, can you?
No, you can. And when you talk about compassion, I mean, you know, I live in the city of Baltimore, and let me tell you about the compassion that I see here. I see school kids who go to school having to wear winter coats in January. I see young men of working age who stand on the street corners because they have nothing to do. I see kids who are panhandling on the street or, you know, working with squeegees because they can't find jobs. Barbara Jordan actually warned us, and you'd alluded to her before, and for your listeners, she was a civil rights icon, first African-American woman elected to Congress from the South. You know, she noted the fact that our immigration policy needs to take advantage of our most disadvantaged individuals in the United States, and that's members of minority groups, inner-city youth, individuals who haven't had the benefits of education, work experience like you and I have. And that's who these people are going to be in direct competition with. The vast majority of these individuals don't even have high school educations, let alone college degrees. We're not getting engineers coming over the border from Tijuana. So, you know, they're going to be directly competing with the most disadvantaged members of our society. And the fact is, it's going to make it harder for those individuals, the most needy in our society, the most disadvantaged, those who have been, you know, unfortunately screwed by the system, to find employment, to support themselves. And unfortunately, we're just going to see a system of failure replicate itself, just like we've seen here in the city of Baltimore, unless we actually make the hard decisions. And again, it's a hard decision, but the fact is mercy cuts many ways. And, you know, say, look, Honduras's problems are Honduras's problems. We understand that there's poverty. We understand that there's crime. And we're willing to help Honduras develop. We're willing to help Guatemala develop. I mean, El Salvador, I mean, probably 40% of El Salvadorans live in the United States anyway, and remittances are probably a huge part of their economy. But, you know, we're doing everything that we can. We can do more to help grow those economies, and we're willing to do so. But those countries need to solve their own problems. They don't need to look to the United States, and we're not a safety valve for their issues.
Right, and with being the safety valve, it takes the pressure off the governments that are serving those people or not serving those people, and there are ways to help, and obviously we have tried. We've tried over the years, over the decades, and most recently with Jeff Sessions as Attorney General, I believe, in the law enforcement, in working with certain countries that are a part of this caravan. So as you see this, it's a communications issue, because in order to get the political will, you know, politics is the art of what's possible, we have to convince the American people and make the case. If you were speaking to President Trump and you said, and you speak to America a lot because you're on Fox News and you're featured, and thank heavens, because you educate us. But if you were speaking to President Trump and said, hey, look, you have to give an address. You have to address this to the nation. You got to make your case. What do you say?
I would go back to, you know, 25-year-old speeches that Barbara Jordan gave, because she laid out the argument. She laid out the argument for Donald Trump a quarter century ago. You know, she stated that the immigration system can be summed up in one phrase: those who should get in, get in; those who shouldn't get in, don't get in; and those who are here illegally must leave. And, you know, we need to talk about how this adversely affects our society. You hear people from, like, the Cato Institute talk about how, you know, well, if you had unlimited immigration, it would really only lower the wages of poor people by 4%. Well, when you're making $18,000 a year, 4% is $720. That's a nice chunk of change. I've lived, you know, on a little bit less than that when I was a young college graduate. And that's one of those things that people can understand. People know what's going on in their own communities, and they can see that the poverty that's around them, and they want to lift people up from that poverty. They also want to stem the flow of heroin. They want to stem the flow of methamphetamine to the United States. The president needs to do a very good job of plainly and concisely setting forth the reasons why his ideas are good. And quite frankly, most of his ideas are good. And again, he should cite back to, you know, the origins of the Immigration and Nationality Act, but especially to Barbara Jordan, appointed by Bill Clinton to be the chairman of the Commission on Immigration Reform. Go back to her testimony and explain why these actions are necessary and why we need to stem the flow. Another thing that I would do is I would point out the dangers that these individuals face as they come to the United States. It's curious, back in 2014 when Barack Obama was president, we were faced with a flow of immigrant children coming to the United States. National Public Radio and National Geographic, believe it or not, actually had features that talked about the rapes, the robberies, the murders that occurred on that.
So true compassion there, Andrew, is the fact is true compassion is actually exposing the rest of the story, or nothing but truth, in the way of saying, hey, this is what happens. One thing I would love is to get you and anybody else from the other side on to debate the issue, because it'd be fantastic. And Andrew R. Arthur, resident fellow in law and policy at the Center for Immigration Studies, I appreciate you taking the time. I would have you on for the rest of the show, but unfortunately we got a break and I'll let you go. But thank you for taking the time this morning. Great to be with you.